everybody. This is Armand DeMel with you at The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests. And yesterday, of course, we had some special programming on, gave Stephanie and me an opportunity to attend a conference out at Purchase, SUNY University at Purchase, where they did something that was really quite remarkable. And we want to present this information to you today because we're going to be able to bring us questions, and I want you to be a part of the program today. Write down this phone number, 212-209-2900. Dial early and then dial back because we want to include you. There were two parts of this presentation, which was about music and the brain. How music affects the brain, how the brain is affected in so many different ways. A brilliant man named Joseph Ledoux talked about the emotional brain, and he was talking about emotions and what emotions are, and he was talking about memories and how memories are formed. And he was trying to find a way to take away the toxic, bad feelings that get associated with traumatic memories. And they were talking about trying to do it by different adjustments, chemical adjustments, and different manipulations of the brain stuff that we know about. He talked about something fascinating, which is about the most recent memory discovery, which is the following, as best I could describe it to you. What we used to think of as a consistent memory, you had a memory when you were a kid, somebody chased you and then you ran away and you remember what that person looks like. And every time you remember that, you remember the same person who chased you. The same idea. You remember the same incident and you say, that's what scared me as a kid. Or when you were a kid, you were beaten for something. And you remember exactly what you were beaten for, and you have memories, and these memories plague you. These memories, sometimes they create such a devastation in you that you can't move forward with your life. You know, that's what we do. That's what psychotherapy is about. Psychotherapy very often is trying to take the memories that people are trying to suppress and push out of their head because they don't want to think about it. You know, I don't want to think about those horrible things. But we find out that behind that, they are thinking about it without even knowing it. For example, I don't want to think about, one woman said to me, I don't want to think of the betrayal I felt at my father. But that same woman turns around and she talks about how evil George Bush was for betraying the country. Well, of course, but you see, there's this big influence. If you're trying to deny one evil, your energy is going to go in the direction of finding another source that's equivalent of that. Love is that, for example. For many people, being loved by your mother, right? Trying to get your mother's love, trying to get her approval, that's a big deal. And you have memories of where she wouldn't give it to you or where she denied it to you and stuff like that. And so you spend your life remembering the pain of that, the pain of the rejection, the pain of not being good enough, the pain of her not being available. Well, here's what Joseph Ledoux found. He found that all memories are not solid, that a memory is only as fresh as the last time you remembered it. Basically, in effect, he was saying every time you recall the memory, and you think about it, and you talk about it, that's the way it becomes, as opposed to the way it really was. Do we really remember these facts out of childhood? I have a good example of that. I remember I was with my two sisters. I have two sisters. One is older and one is younger. And I'm with my two sisters one day, and my older sister says, oh, remember that terrible time I hit you over the head with a milk bottle? When I was a boy, she said, you were like 3 or 4 years old, and the milkman delivered milk in a bottle, and I hit you over the head with the bottle. And my younger sister said, that didn't happen. She said, that never happened. She said, he picked up the bottle, and he broke the bottle of milk. And then We said, well, what's the true memory? Of course, if you had hit a little boy over the head with a bottle of milk, the little boy wouldn't be here now. So, but the way she looked at me and she said, you know, I think that's the way I remembered it. And I have to look back on my own memories. There are many memories I have which were created. I mean, things that never happened that I remember as being real. A man I know tells a story about how as a kid, he had two scars on his arms. They were like birth defects. And he would tell the story about how he was up in camp and he would get these ticks. These bugs would go on his arm. He said, and one time a tick went on my arm and it burrowed itself under my flesh. And it crawled all the way out to the other side. And that he said what they wanted to do, the doctors, to get rid of that tick is they poured gunpowder on the wound where the tick went in. And then they lit the gunpowder and it forced the tick to come out on this other side of his skin where the other mark was. He believed for years that the two scars on his arm were caused by ticks that were treated with burning gunpowder. We see he told the story so often, it became real. How many of your memories are real? How many of them are just bringing back something and then changing it a little bit and changing it a little bit and changing it a little bit? It's hard to know what you remember is real. Yet we know we remember. But what is right? What is not right? A memory from childhood. You could check it out. You could ask people about it. It's very difficult to maintain because each time you tell the story, it becomes a new memory. This he proved kind of chemically. He showed the way protein synthesis happens. And therefore, the proof is if you're somebody who broods over the past, if you're somebody who talks about your past over and over again, if you're depressed and you keep talking about what you were like and how it was and what I was like when I was 16 and what I was like when I was 23, you know, I was the same way 14 years ago that I am now. Well, maybe you're creating the same way by remembering it that way. Maybe you create the memory, just as he said. Maybe you're not that way. Maybe you create the memory. We often talk ourselves into situations. What is it that you remember that you're in question of? So there's my first question for you callers. And the telephone number, I said again, is 209-2900. Do you have any memories that you're in question of, that you're not sure of? They sit there and you kind of think and you kind of not think. Now, I will tell you that most people, when they report any incidents of abuse of any kind, the other person is always afraid to question whether it really happened or not. So I'm not going to challenge memories of abuse. But let's try other memories. Let's try memories that were solid memories. How about good memories? How about what's the most positive memory you have of something that took place when you were very little, let's say age 3 or less, age 5 or less? The most solid, positive memory you have exactly as it took place with one of your parents. Think about that. Not a bad thing to think about, right? Think back. Think back. You're a little child, and you have a memory of something between age 3 and 5. And by the way, later in the show, we're going to report to you on what we found out about the use of music, which is related to the same conference, and music and some of its dynamics. Fabulous stuff. But right now, we're dealing with memory. Can you think of a positive memory that you had somewhere between age 0 and 5 that took place with one of your family memories and family members, and it's kind of a real vivid memory? 212-209-2900. Let's see if we have any callers on the line, Michael. 212-209-2900.
Not yet.
Okay, nobody calling in yet. Let's get a couple of our stars in here because I know usually people don't call in early enough. And then we get our lines flooded. 212-209-2900. So a memory is only as good as the last time you remembered it. Okay, we're going to get back to that in a little bit. In the meantime, let's start going into the conference. Stephanie, I want to ask Stephanie Dumber to join me. Stephanie, that was quite a bunch of stuff that we were presented. Now, of course, we had Connie on the show with us the prior Wednesday.
Right. There was Connie Tomaino, who is the director of this Institute for Music and Neurological Function. She was on with Marlon Sobel, which was a really fun show, actually. It was nice with the drumming and the information. So they presented a conference in collaboration with the School of Music at Purchase College.
School of Music, and I just want to make a mention for this about the School of Music. When I was younger, in the field of psychotherapy and psychology, there always was music therapy. Music therapy was a form of therapy that was practiced by some people, where it was kind of like, we will play music for you and that will heal you, basically was the idea of it, behind it. And it was never considered a serious treatment form. No insurance company would ever cover it. You couldn't really get a job that way unless there was a lot of excess money in the institution, you know. Mostly the colleges hired people, but very few places had music therapy. Maybe it's part of OT, but there was music therapy almost died out. But then when what we saw was when Oliver Sacks, was it, wrote his book about this, and he started talking about the brain and music, and he talked about the curative powers of music, then suddenly the attention's coming back, and we are paying attention to the mind and music. And I'll tell you, friends, I think we're going to rediscover the wheel. I believe that music therapy, in its great practice, in the best way that it's practiced, has got some phenomenal successful possibilities, and we're going to describe a couple of the successes that we saw, just we were able to see either through presentation.
Well, one thing that we saw yesterday, which really piqued my interest, the word curative is really important to say, because I think that what they have been able to show is that during a kind of music therapy session, let's say with people who have Alzheimer's, as we spoke about last week, a person that has some kind of impairment or the inability to communicate with words or their hands is kind of stuck in their inside world. But music has this ability to bypass the impairment in their brain and activate something in their brain so that they can then participate. They can sing, they can move, they can dance, they can, you know, hit drums, and they can even speak. And so normally when they're just sitting there and in their kind of what we would imagine a vegetative state, they're not really talking to people, they're just sitting in quiet. But music, whatever form it is, gets them to be engaged. So for that moment, their quality of life, their ability to experience something is really beautiful. You can see it. Whether it cures the condition, I don't think they're there yet. However, I think what they've shown in the research is that with children who have developmental delays during that period when the brain is not developed, from 0 to 3, 0 to 5, those kind of therapies actually do help get the networks moving and developing. So they showed a little child who was not even maybe a year and a half, and she was delayed and had problems communicating. But when the music therapist played a song on her guitar and made very kind of distinct sounds with her voice, oohs and ahs, that little child who was delayed was able to engage and make the sounds and mimic the therapist. And by doing that, you are developing all those connections that aren't happening in a normal situation.
There's a, I think we're at the beginning of it. I think that music therapy for a while was almost like play, and I think we're at the beginning of its real use. So here's the thing, my friends, you're going to spend the holidays coming up, and some of you, most of you by now, are going to have an elder relative around. You know, and what do you do with your elder relative? You get them socks? What do you do? Well, music. Dance. Get your aunt, go visit somebody who's away in a home and see what it's like to bring them something that is either rhythmic or musical. We have a couple of books with us. We're going to have there's the healing power of the drum. is written by Robert Friedman. Another one called Emotional Process in Music Therapy by John Pelletieri. These are all going to be with us because I'm going to follow through on this. Music itself is powerful, very, very powerful tool. Music can make you, you know, they talk about the mood of music. What kind of music do you buy? What are the different kinds of music? There are blues. I wonder how that's supposed to make you feel. There's mood music, right? There's in the sentimental music. There's classical music.
Jazz.
There's jazz music.
Jazz was very kind of highly discussed in the music seminar.
Well, yes, jazz was very important because of what does it do?
Well, I think when a musician improvises with jazz, not just practices and follows the notes, but actually goes into that kind of trance-like state, whatever that is, then different things happen in the brain. They're able to actually somewhat scan the person's brain and see that things either are activated or they're shrunk, so to speak. And it's almost like meditation. So it's the same type of process to some extent that you're really doing something and the person's not even aware of their time, the time around themselves, and something is being altered positively. You know, so it's really an incredible thing.
Having grown up in the world of jazz music,
yeah.
I had never seen the dissociative state. I still haven't seen it. One would think, now I would watch Charlie Parker play, and you would see him go off on riffs that you wouldn't even know he was there. But at any moment, if you said, hey, Charlie, you're stepping on a cigarette or something, he'd move his foot. So they
well,
were not.
Well, that is interesting because it's
they
like,
were not gone.
Yeah, no, I don't think that you're fully gone, but clearly something is taking
over. There's
that over.
Kind of a. And now I know it because doing a drum solo, you know, when I would get into a drum solo, I was transported.
I understand it when I play piano. I know. I really do understand it.
So there's something about being transported into the world, especially the world of improvisation. That is very special for us to understand. And we're learning from it how we can help and cure people, if not cure, at least help people come out who might have been buried. Music is really becoming very important. Let's talk about
well, a couple of
Rocky.
Yeah, other things too, because again, some of these things may be able to delay the condition or help it from progressing further. And one condition that really is obviously involved with dopamine is Parkinson's. And music and dopamine, we know, they have a direct connection.
Well,
if you're
a lot of people listening
yes,
don't
I'll
even know what
that.
Dopamine
okay,
is.
Dopamine is one of these major neurotransmitters that help us with focus and pleasure and reward and attention. And so
a neurotransmitter means...
It's one of the chemicals that are released through the synapses, the neurons, and they are when there's firing going on, we have all this electricity, so to speak, in the brain. It's sending messages to produce this kind of chemical. So we have a lot of those, which we often talk about on this show. But dopamine spikes when we listen to wonderful music that we enjoy. And so does rhythm and drumming. All these things are related. It's not the only thing that's going on, but dopamine is involved.
And dopamine is a good feeling.
It's a good feeling. It gives us pleasure.
Good feeling. You know what I heard today, Stephanie, completely off the subject? Heroin is on the rise in Suffolk County. Suffolk County.
I know this distinctly, yes.
And you know what form? Right? Snorting heroin.
Yeah. It's.
And heroin has gotten cheaper than ever before.
Tough stuff.
You know? And yes. It's like, well, how did this happen? How did this slip in there sideways? Heroin is becoming the drug of choice.
Teenagers, too.
Teenagers,
yeah,
especially.
I know.
Snorting
yeah.
heroin. Talk about our own need to change our brains, you see?
I know.
The teenager is saying to herself, let my mind do that thing himself. And so he gets heroin, and when you put heroin in your body and you snort it, you really have a moment of heaven. It's a wonderful, wonderful,
yes.
wonderful
I mean, I haven't
feeling.
Personally done it, but I can imagine
it's a
what
great
it does.
Feeling.
It takes over.
And it takes over and everything goes away.
Yeah.
All worries go away, all fears go away. It was one of the reasons I left the jazz world when I was a kid. It was because I found too much fun with heroin. And I said, hey, you know, this may be play, but I think it's pretty dangerous. you know, for me to stick around with. And that's why I left.
Yeah.
Also because I didn't think I was good enough. Actually, I didn't think I was a great jazz musician. I thought it was good, but not great. No, I thought it was fair, but not good. I thought I was a fair musician, but there were so many. I was playing with all the greats, and they were just terrific. However, going back to this, the mood of being able to escape with your mind, with heroin, with teenagers in Suffolk County, how could that be happening? Well, what do you think is happening every time you go on a subway and everybody sitting next to you is wearing a headphone and they're listening to their music blasting? What are they doing? They are changing the chemistry of their brain. They are getting dopamine as well as a bunch of other chemicals to come out and dominate. You may not think, and this is a use of music. I mean, this is music changing the chemistry of your brain. The music you listen to changes you. It doesn't, it's not just nice. What is it your daughter says?
I'm going to listen to my favorite song so I can feel better. Those are her words.
You have a young, you have a daughter, right? Yes. She's, how old is she?
She's going to be 13.
13 years old. And if she feels distressed.
Yeah.
She's going to go put on her favorite song,
right,
to feel better.
Mm-hmm. It works.
And it works.
It works. She gets up, she dances, she sings. It's not only listening. You know, we were talking earlier about what experience do you have of music? Do you listen, which is passive, but things are happening inside that are not passive in the brain? Do you participate? Do you actually play? Do you create music, even when you're creating it the old-fashioned way with a piece of paper and pencil and, you know, staff music? You're doing all sorts of things with your mind, and it's fabulous stuff for the brain and our mood and how we feel about things. So there's a lot of ways to experience music.
I wonder where the negative side of it is. You know, you say it's the fabulous way, and yet I'm thinking about, well, wait a minute. If we have heroin, right, we could say the fabulous way of using heroin to make yourself feel calm. You know, what about the fabulous way of blasting your ears with such loud music?
Well, I think there's damage ears, but that's not, I don't think there's damage to the brain. They haven't shown that.
Well, how about becoming dopaminergic? How about the fact that you get so used to having dopamine all the time, Stephanie, that you just become addicted to it? You know, so, I mean, it's like, it's not that it's all good. The thing we're presenting to you, my friends, is that everything has an effect. And it has an effect, and it's all observable, and nothing is all good, and nothing is all bad. Think about your own music. And here's the second call I want to be receiving today, as well as the memories. I want to get calls from people, 212-209-2900, about your very favorite music. I want to hear about your music, and I'm going to ask you details about the music, and we want to find out what it accesses in you and what it can do in you to make you, and how it kind of pulls you together. We're going to learn about it not only now, but in many future programs. We're going to be focusing on the skill and art of music. 212-209-2900. We're going to take your calls in a second. Okay, we're going to be able to take more than one. Also, a reminder, in one of the projects that we're doing here, we're looking for a part-time bookkeeper to help us out on a project. You can go to my website and send me an email if you have any interest in doing that, okay? Part-time, full-charge bookkeeper, somebody who knows all about doing that stuff. 212-209-2900. Let's take your call right now. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Armand?
Yes.
Yeah, hi, this is Ansara.
Hello, Ansara. Nice to hear from you.
How you doing? The first question... one of the things that I do is I keep a journal, pretty much a diary journal of most things that go on, and I can definitely confirm that there are things that I've written years ago, and I continue to sort of tell the story. Then I go back, and I look at the journal, and sometimes it can be as much as 180-degree difference of what I thought it was.
Amazing, isn't it?
It just leaves me almost dumbfounded. I'm like, but I thought it was this way. And of course, since I wrote it down, you know, when it happened, it was completely different. I was like, this is amazing. You know,
it's like me remembering my favorite book.
By the way, Armand, is the story, the game that kids play called Telephone. where you're supposed to tell from one to the other to the other. And, of course, what you're doing with your mind is you're telling yourself the story, but you're getting it mixed up with what's going on in the present. So you're adding details or leaving out details each time you remember it. Therefore, a year later, it's completely different, just as you said, in terms of memory.
That's great. You know, it reminds me of me recommending my favorite books. When I was a kid, I read a number of books that I thought were just terrific. I mean, so fabulous. I remember being totally obsessed, carrying the books with me everywhere and recommending them to everyone. And in my adult years here, many, many years later, people say, what do you love? And I tell them the books. And they read the books and they come back to me and they say, eh. So I read the book and it's totally not what I thought it was. Because my memory of the book was the one or two points that I would pull out of the book that I repeated year and again and again. So even remembering what I read turns out to be a false memory. But continue with you, Ansara. What's the other, the second part?
Okay, well, the second part was your second question.
Yeah.
About the music. Should I go to that one?
Yes, go.
Okay. I find that I like a lot of different kinds of music. The one kind of music that I don't understand is the one that you like and that my writing teachers like, which is jazz. I just don't feel, I guess you say advanced jazz. I just don't get it. And my teachers and people have said, you just need to understand it. But the music I do like a lot, definitely like, I guess African-American, you know, the Temptations and whatever. And like the doctor said about her daughter, when I want to feel good, I'll put on that music. And then classical music, like, for example, Pachelbel Canon or Kitaro or those guys, the environmental music, can definitely put me in that mood. And I'll put that on when I want to relax, and it works wonderfully.
Well, let me ask you something about you and your own, and Sarah Rao, because your name, of course, is in itself a repetition. How do you like repetitions? How do you like things you could predict?
Hmm.
You know, and that's where I'm going to go for with you. You know, you listen to the canon by Pachelbel, you listen to all these other things. The beauty of the music and the beauty of some of the way that this music works with the people who may have emotional challenges is that it's predictable. And when it's predictable, you find a safety and a comfort in that. And the biggest thing about jazz, progressive jazz, is that at its best, it's not predictable. At its best, one of the things you find is, how did he go there? Where did he go? How did he take that trip? You know? And so it may be in the lack of predictability that you find discomfort.
That makes sense. The only thing I would add to that is that, for me, there's a balance. The other day at a health food store, the lady gave me a CD of Chinese music because I told her that I liked the music. She gave me the CD. And I remember listening to it, and it was very calming. And then it got boring, you know, because
right.
It was the same
too
thing.
Too much repetition.
It's calming, but it's boring. So I think what I need is essentially a balance. I need something that's somewhat repetitious, but as some of the great composers do, they add a little something slowly to it.
Sounds like you're
and
talking
with you with jazz because it jars me and I don't expect it. Then I go, where did that come from?
Sounds you like know? You're talking so, about your preference for relationships too. I want somebody who is going to be at least predictable, but certainly not so predictable that there's no variation at all.
Which is what my writing is about. My writing is perhaps something is, again, probable and understandable, but again, not predictable.
Oops, we have to take our break, and Sarara, I guess I'll have to play you some special music for this break, see how this relates. We're going to be back with you in just a couple of minutes, my friends. You're listening to Ramsey Lewis, The In Crowd. If you let yourself, you can let all of you respond to it. See how many different parts of you you have available that'll respond to the beat, to the theme, to the music itself. Now sit back down, wiggling those toes. Ramsey Lewis. Where were you the first time you heard the Beatles? Hey, Stephanie, do you remember where you were the very first time you heard them?
I think I do, actually. I think I was at one of my family's parties, and we were dancing. And that's about the best I can do.
And did you pay attention? Did it draw your attention, you say?
I can't say this specific memory. I do remember playing Eleanor Rigby on the piano. That's a very specific memory.
It is The Positive Mind with WBAI 99.5 FM. I just received such a lovely donation. It was a $50 donation to the station, unasked for, you know, after everything. Just really lovely. And you lovely people, love you all. I want to make one more comment. Somebody came to me recently having cashed in one of the consultations that we offered. And the person came in, and there I am, this nice guy, Armand, you always hear on the radio, but I am very, very serious about my work. And when I look at people, I look with such close eyes. It was like I'm an automobile mechanic, you know. I want to check your headlights and say, wait, does everything work? And she said, you're not the same as you are on the radio. And it's absolutely true. I'm not the same as I am on the radio. When I am working, which is when I'm doing interviews with people, where people are coming to me and saying, hey, something's broken, could you help me fix it? I'm a scientist. All I could do is investigate. All I could do is check. There's a lot of nice guy behind it, but don't expect I'm going to be the very same. Well, we'll just have you come on the radio and we'll talk on the radio. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. We're taking your calls about two things. Early childhood memories, a positive memory that you had from age five backwards, one item with somebody in your family, and the other is your music. And how your music touches you. Those are the two calls we're taking. Let's take another call now. This is Armand DeMille. Thanks, and Sarara, by the way. And we'll take another call. Hi there, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you? It's Diane here. I am so interested in this because I don't have memories. And I'm thinking, you're talking about 5 years and younger and all these memories that people have. I can't reach back and dig up any memories, and I've known this. I think about my school years, and maybe through high school, I remember 6 or 10 teachers total. I think about my college years. I can't remember a single teacher in my college years. I'm 51.
Do you remember anything else from that period
well,
of time?
I mean, you know what? I think I remember more photographs. I have memories of photographs of things.
See, now that's there's a great example. That's exactly what we were talking about. So instead of people having memories, what they very often have is a photograph. And then they look at the photograph and they say, ah, I remember when. But they're not. They're remembering from the photograph.
What? They're not remembering from the photograph?
No, they are remembering, but they're not remembering the original thing.
Exactly. Exactly. And I mean, those are, but still, five and below, I mean, that's tough. And I sometimes sit with people and they'll say, oh, I remember my first grade teacher, my kindergarten teacher. And I think, what happens, some people remember and some don't?
Let's check for a minute, Diane. Is it possible? Is it possible that what you've had is some early childhood memories that you wouldn't want to remember? I mean, did you grow up in a rough way?
No, I don't think so.
Because I would imagine also that what we could develop is a mechanism that helps us shut off all memories because some were painful. Do you know what I mean? I imagine we could develop.
I mean, I've heard that and you hear that, but to my knowledge, there's nothing. But
and in studying this work by Ledoux, Joseph Ledoux, I think you might want to take a look at it in The Emotional Brain, although it's a very difficult book to read because he's a scientist. He talks about how memory works, and you would find yourself very forgiving because it is highly possible that the very way that your protein synthesis happened is that you just don't record those memories. It's possible. It doesn't necessarily make it pathological. I would check to see if there are early childhood memories that were associated to it that may be traumatic. But if there's nothing that you could remember that was very tough growing up,
right,
which surprises me because most people remember stuff tough growing up. In fact, most people who ever become fans of WBAI remember stuff tough when they're growing up. It was a real easy life for you?
No, I don't remember things. I had a mother and father. They weren't divorced. There wasn't, fighting amongst them in the house. You know, could something have happened? Sure, but it's not like I could say, well, because of these things, sure, maybe something happened, but there's no connection with incidents that lead me to think something happened.
And there's nothing that your siblings would have told you.
Right.
Right? They don't tell you anything. They don't say what they remember and you don't.
My sister doesn't remember things either. My brother does. My brother does, but my sister doesn't.
Well, that's interesting.
My sister and I are the same way. Just don't have the memory.
It's fascinating stuff. I wish I had the time to go over it with you. Probably I would need at least an hour to check just on that specifically. You know, is it sex-specific? You know, is it chemical sex-specific? Or is it... What are you thinking, Stephanie?
I have a theory, and I don't know that it's only my theory, but I think that when a person has a memory, there's a lot more emotionality and sometimes pleasure, and I think dopamine is involved. When I see people who have these very specific memories, and Diane, plenty of people don't have specific memories either, from what I understand, but when they have very specific memories, they usually are what we're going to say dopaminergic. So there's this high energy, and I don't know what your brother is like, but that's my sense is that when a person is really high energy and is involved in everything, they tend to really be able to recall their memories. Like Armand, you have this beautiful memory, this ability to remember the songs and words verbatim from 50 years ago. Not everybody has that.
Before I was born.
Before you were born.
212,
so
Diane.
So I don't know about your brother and why there's a difference, if there's a sex difference, but men tend to have more of the dopamine flooding their left brain, and who knows, but that's a theory.
You know, it is a theory, but I also know, Stephanie, that there are people who brood on memories, on negative memories, who just sit around and they're depressed, and their energy is low, and it's not dopaminergic, you know, and it's just really low, and they all think about the same thing over and over again. My father treated me wrong. My mother treated me wrong. My father treated me wrong. My mother treated me wrong. And they live on it over and over and over again, and there's no energy.
But I don't know if that's a memory as opposed to ruminating and obsessing.
That's true. Well,
which is
see,
a different
now, wait,
thing.
Well, what's the difference between ruminating, obsessing, and memory?
Well, memory.
What is the difference? Because you're supposedly saying that memory is.
Yeah.
No, but you, Stephanie, what do you?
Well, again, I would like to know what your brother is like, Diane. Is he different than you? Why does he have the recall?
He's the oldest. I'm the youngest. And personality-wise, I don't see him as being any more outgoing or less outgoing. You know, the three of us seem to be pretty similar in our personalities. That we're pretty, you know, middle of the road. We're not like the director types and, you know, lots of attention, lots of, you know, always have to be the first. We're just kind of, you know, middle of the road. And
well, I tell you, it's fabulous, fascinating. Diane, thank you so much. Joseph Ledoux, L-E-D-U.
Yes.
No, wait, let me get the spelling.
L-E-D-O-U-X.
L-E-D-O-U-X. Joseph Ledoux, The Emotional Brain, right? Very, very interesting stuff around memory.
Okay, that would be your recommendation, something I could read?
Yeah, take a look and see what you find from that.
Okay.
Thanks a lot for calling in.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there. 212-209-2900, Armand, you're on the air. Hi there, you're on the air. Hello?
Got tired of waiting.
Okay, oh, yeah, and that's what happens. You people get tired of waiting, and then we get disconnected. The new telephone company rules. That's what happens with the telephone company. The telephone company says, after 15 rings, we disconnect you because they don't want people on endlessly non-productive phone calls. And this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Here's a song I promised to play for someone. But let's take this call right now. Hi there, you're on the air.
Hello, Armand. How are you?
Good. Who is this?
My name is Jose.
Jose.
I am a Queens resident.
Hello, Jose.
Okay, how are you? I'm calling about one of the fond memories that I have is about actually getting spanked by my mother and understanding that she cared and loved me by doing so. There was one day that I, of course, something mischievous I must have done, and my mother grabbed her famous flip-flop. It was like a special flip-flop, and she was actually spanking me, and I crouched down like in a fetal position, and she right away stopped when I did that and hugged me and told me that not to do that because she understood that I guess I was becoming fearful of her as opposed to just getting punished for her and trying to understand what I did wrong. And at that point, for some reason, I don't know how, I remember this from when I was 4 or 5 years old, that I understood she cared for me and loved me and was trying to protect me from doing anything wrong.
You know, that's quite a remarkable reasoning in your mind.
I don't know how.
And you're probably, you know, Jose, it's probably true. It's probably true. You caught a moment of tenderness that is memorable, and it's the way you remember it. It's as you remember it. Good. You wouldn't want to be remembering her punishing you. But, you know, the fact that it was like being spanked with a flip-flop does not mean she was seriously trying to hurt you or be punitive.
Right, right. But I don't know how I connected those dots, but I did at that age. I'm going to say it's 4 years old, but I'm going to say probably five, that I can't say that I can remember exactly.
Well, let me ask you something in relationships with people nowadays. When people when people work with you, when they fight with you, when they argue with you, do you ever feel that it's an act of love or an act of, you know, in your relationships, do you find having confrontation a positive thing or a negative thing?
There's a lot of times that it brings something positive out of it because I get to see the other person's point of view and at least try to understand what they're saying and listen, really, to what they're trying to get across to me. But I think it's really positive sometimes when someone argues at least a point and you try to understand where they're coming from and what their reasoning is. from it. Even though they might be wrong, they might be right, but you just have a better understanding as to where they're coming from.
That's a beautiful thing, Jose, since you're learning from it. Great. Thank you very much. By the way, Jose, what's your favorite music?
I have to say merengue. I'm a Dominican descendant, so I have to say it's merengue.
And when you hear merengue, what does it do to you?
It brings me back. I lived from the age of 6 to 12 in Dominican Republic, so it brings me back to my grandmother, seeing my grandmother in the countryside, and just all the wonderful experiences I had in that time. I think that was the best thing that ever happened.
Well, what do you mean seeing your grandmother back then? How did you, where was grandma having to do with merengue?
Well, because she always had it playing either in the kitchen while she was cooking, and it was nurturing and taking care of me by making sure there was food there, making sure I was being taken care of. So I had love there to be shared with me from my grandmother. Well, knowing that, it brings me back to my childhood, and it makes me just happy. It really does. I don't know how to explain it right now, but...
Well, and do you remember one particular one that brings you back?
The name of the song? Or...
Yeah.
there's one... I can't tell... There is a couple. There's so many. But I can't tell you one particularly.
How often do you dance?
Before I got married, a lot.
And what happened?
After, not that much.
Well, what happened since?
Let's say once a month, let's say.
Yeah.
We go out dancing, at least. Or maybe a family function or something.
And what's it like? I mean, when you're dancing, what's it like?
I really enjoy it. I really don't understand how some people add this sexual part to it. I understand why they do it, but to me, it's not really about the sex. It's really more about enjoying the music and the work that goes into it, and the different instruments coming together in one piece and making the music that they do make.
Does this music sound familiar to you? That's exactly right. It is Joe Ventura. Yeah, let's let the audience hear. Now watch it. Let's watch you, Jose, pull up your memory right now. Ay, esperar que llegue la aurora. Mami, si te vas, no te vayas sola. Hasta la tambora. Johnny Ventura, right from the Dominican Republic. Kind of music your grandmother would have played.
Yes, it would. And that song in particular is a very good example as to explaining person that loves and understands that music. Because he's saying that he's a merengue, meaning that he likes merengue to the point of never ending, which is la tambora, which represents, is one of the instruments, is a drum instrument that is played while merengue is being played.
Well, beautiful. Thank you for bringing us that, Jose. We're going to play it as our outro music. So you stay tuned and we'll get you the whole part of it.
Okay.
Thank you for calling in. This is Armand DeMille, always learning. Of course, something like that. Hey, 212-209-2900, we're taking new calls. Let's grab another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hi, Mr. Armand. This is Imaf.
Yes.
How are you? I just wanted to comment on one thing. As far as the music, I do agree with you when you mentioned it's probably dopaminergic, which means, I mean, it's just people get addicted to the music. It's just to release dopamine. I do find that music kind of doesn't help as far as when I'm trying to focus. So I actually cut down on music the past few years a lot more than usual. And people tell me, how come you don't listen to music? I'm like, you know, I can't focus when I'm listening to music. And I see a lot of people listening to music. I think a lot of people listen to music when they don't feel good. I prefer to actually go experience having a positive experience more than listen to music if I want to have. So when you say,
well, you see, now there's not a right or wrong here. What we have here is some people, and I know people who are like this, they can't, they don't want their attention split. See, right. If you see the world as one way or another, I'm either going to think or I'm going to feel. I'm either going to move or I'm going to think. You know, to me, putting both together makes me function better. To other people, you got to have them separate. Sometimes if I'm listening to a music I don't like to hear, I couldn't possibly listen to it while I'm trying to work. Isn't there any particular sound, if it were just a meditation sound or a light bell or the sound even of the birds outside, that would help you when you're doing your work?
Of course, yes.
What is it?
I think I prefer just nature. So anything.
Okay, so let's take nature. You know, when we talk about nature, we're talking about music.
Right.
That is perfect music. If we took nature and we put it on... just on a disc for you to listen to while you were working, would you say it distracts you?
No, definitely not.
So there it is.
Yes.
So it's something about the structure of music that is outside the natural that to you separates you from what you want to do. It's kind of interesting.
Yes. As far as memories, I mean, I was trying to recall memories since the beginning of the program. I was listening. And most of the memories, I agree with the other lady. She was saying I can't remember. I do remember, unfortunately, more negative memories. And you know, I was Stephanie, your guest, she was saying that people with less energy tend to manifest and obsess with negative emotions and negative feelings. And the memories, and I do tend to focus more on, unfortunately, on the bad memories. I bring those back, and I kind of think it affects my behavior and my social, the way I interact with people and everything. So I,
you know, it would be very interesting, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, you need, it would be very interesting if you ever consulted with have you ever seen anybody, talk to anybody about your memories from the past?
Not really, not much.
It would really be an interesting thing to free your mind.
Yeah.
You're in a bit of a prison from what I hear. You know, trapped by your own memories. Someday if you get a chance, let me know when and I'll guide you to find
a
way.
I don't mind coming over to your office. You know, that'll be fine too. I've been listening to you for a long time, but recently, I just started working, and I'm very interested also to come over.
What's your name, by the way?
My name is Imaf, A-M-A-F.
Imaf, I look forward to meeting you one day, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. This is Armand DeMille with you. We have to be going. Luckily, some of you bought those special donations during the fund drive. You can make access to those. We have to be going right now, and I want to be playing for you some of that beautiful music. Merenguero hasta la tambora. And remember, once again, that one opening, bookkeeper opening, send me an email, only through email, armand@thepositivemind.com.